Reggie Van Stockham, lawyer, teacher, biologist, writer, guitarist, will be with us from time to time for conversations about his journey logs. These are extensive travels that chronicle life along the back roads of Kentucky. Places like our first stop in Estill County, with its welcome sign telling us that we're entering a place where the bluegrass kisses the mountains, an area also known as the Knobs. Welcome to Eastern Standard, Reggie.
Thank you, Tom. What a pleasure it is to be here. This is an August broadcast, and I'm very pleased to be part of it.
Well, your treks take us to the kinds of places that we too often drive past without a lot of thought to what we're missing if we would just slow down for a moment, pull over, and take in something of kind of a time machine of the landscape. Tell us what you'll be sharing with our listeners.
Well, let's start with that very famous place on the Kentucky River where Irvine, or Irvin as they pronounce it, now sits. It's the famous ford of the Kentucky River right at the base of the Knobs coming out of the eastern mountains of Kentucky. Now, Irvin is just on the other side of Berea and Richmond as you travel down from Lexington on I-75. But how few people get off and say, let's go take a look at the Kentucky River right there at Irvin. And the railroad town just upstream at Ravenna. It's well worth the time and the visit. And in fact, if you come through Richmond, you'll pass through Bybee, which is the location of that famous Bybee pottery factory that's been there for a couple of hundred years.
And we'll probably explore that in depth a little bit later on in this series. But you wrote an article about Estill County and the towns of Irvine and Ravenna. It's titled Kentucky's Pillars of Hercules. What's that about?
Well, if you think about it, and you think of the Mediterranean, how famous the Straits of Gibraltar were, that constriction at the mouth of the Mediterranean allowed one to pass into the wondrous world encompassed by the shorelines around the Mediterranean. If you think of eastern Kentucky as its own kingdom, then the Pillars of Hercules, the entranceway into the majestic land contained therein, would be where the Kentucky River exited, where the three forks of the Kentucky River come together at Beattyville and then roar down out of the Knobs into the great palisades of the Kentucky River. And where is that? It's at Irvin. Irvin and Ravenna. If you want to enter this kingdom, you follow the Kentucky River upstream, and Irvin and Ravenna are my pillars of Hercules.
And you mentioned that Ravenna is a railroad town. It was established by the L&N, the Louisville and Nashville Railroad, many, many, many decades ago. And there are efforts being made now to revive that part of its history with a railroad museum, which will, we hope, attract people to the area. And I noted in your writings that as you made your way around Estill County, you came upon a big deposit of that dark, crumbly shale that is so prevalent throughout eastern Kentucky, and it's important to the history of eastern Kentucky. Tell us about that stuff.
Yes, and it's really a treasure chest, and that chest is open in the Knobs around Irvin and Ravenna. If you're a rock hound, this is a very famous area. Eastern Kentucky, you'll find sandstones, shales, and coal, a little bit of limestone, dolomite. The farther east you go, the larger the seams of coal become because of the depth of the trough that was there. But right here at Irvin, at these foothills, at these Knobs of the eastern mountains, you have streams cutting into deposits laid down more than 300 million years ago in the Mississippian period that we call the Borden Formation, the Borden Formation. And it's not everywhere, but it is certainly here and to the south. And it occurred when the northeastern Appalachian Mountains were being lifted up. There was a surge, a subsurface surge into the ancient seas of detritus and runoff and erosional material from the mountains that were rising up. So right here around Irvin, you have this Borden Delta, it's sometimes called, and you have these three formations that become so interesting to those of us who are interested in the special rocks they contain. One of them is the Renfro member, and it has an identifying layer of rock, limestone, that is cardboard colored. It's cardboard colored. It's the lower Renfro. You see it as you move from Richmond to Irvin or Irvin to Richmond, going towards or from Drowning Creek. You go over a big hill and you look to your left and your right and you'll see this band of cardboard colored stone. That's the lower Renfro. Now that's going to tell you something important, because right below it is going to be the Nada Shale. The Nada Shale. It's called Blue Shale there. It's called Blue Shale in this area. And in fact, if you brush some of it off that hasn't been in the sun for a while, it does indeed have the patina of that color. But what makes it so interesting is that it has geodes. This is geode country.
Uh-huh.
Now those geodes are special in this area, because that shale along one of the forks of Station Camp Creek, the middle fork, seems to be a treasure chest of a special type of geode, the Kentucky agate. That contains a silicon oxide, the crypto-crystalline form, chalcedony, along with some other minerals that have mixed in with it. And when sawed and polished, give you the incredible colors, the imperial red, the black collars that make Kentucky agates prized all over the world. And where do they come from? They come from right here.
Another place there that is of real interest to me, and we're going to pursue this in a subsequent series on Native American history in Kentucky. It's a place that Daniel Boone, with the help of John Finley, tried to find, and you described it as a magical Shawnee village. I can't pronounce its name.
Yes.
I admit it, but
yes.
But it sounds like a pretty incredible place. Tell us about, I'm going to try it, Ekiska, I can't do it. Can you do it?
Well, I do it in a way that I do it enough that I can repeat it. It's probably not correct, but it'll give you the spirit of the term. It's an Algonquin word, a Shawnee term, Eskapikathikaki.
Okay. What is there, or was there, I should say?
It was on the Great Warrior's Path. Mm-hmm. Now, the Warrior's Path is what the pioneers found when they came through the Cumberland Gap and what got them into the mountains of Kentucky. They veered off it. But originally, when Daniel Boone came through, he was brought in by a fellow named John Finley, who is a mysterious figure of history. But they moved up the Warrior Trail.
And these were paths that were actually worn down by bison, by woolly mammoths. I mean, they're migratory trails, correct?
Well, yes. In fact, much of Kentucky, lots of eastern Kentucky, had a myriad pattern of bison trails. These are prairie bison herds that would cross the Ohio River and come to the licks of Kentucky. There was a giant path of them in the north central bluegrass. They would split off. They would cross at Irvin, at the Great Ford at Irvin, and that's where the Warrior's Path crossed, because it followed that. And if you want to expand your imagination to even greater distances, you can consider the fact that before the bison, did the Pleistocene megafauna travel these routes? Did the giant sloths, the mammoths, and the mastodons, did they also follow or create these paths to the great salt licks of Kentucky, like the ones down at Manchester? And you might say, well, now, Reggie, how can that be? Just go up to Big Bone Lick State Park in Kentucky, and that's where you'll find those megafauna.
Well, how about the village that we were talking about?
Well, it's interesting. The history of Kentucky occupation by peoples is a lot deeper than we think. Mm-hmm. We like to think, we being, what's the right term?
European settlers?
Yeah, that's the right term. That's right. The European settlers who came into Kentucky, they like to think, well, there was no one here. In mm-hmm. Kentucky, it was the dark and bloody ground, and it was a land that was kind of fought over, but people lived south and lived north. That's not incorrect for the impression that they saw, but is incorrect as to the factual basis. Native Americans had been living in Kentucky in great concentrations 10,000 years ago through the Archaic and the Woodland period, the Adena people, the Hopewell people. There was opposite the mouth of the Scioto River at South Portsmouth, Kentucky. There were earthworks up there, massive earthworks in Portsmouth itself. People were all over here, and at different times they would migrate into the eastern mountains to overwinter in the shelters and migrate back out into the bluegrass fields like around my home, to villages where they would live during the summer. But we do have records of Native American villages in Kentucky before the European settlers came over en masse. There weren't many. And if you think about it, there's a couple of reasons we can attribute that. One was European diseases. By the time we were in Kentucky looking at the long knives or the long hunters who came into Kentucky, European diseases had decimated the Native American population. And there's no question about it. The only question, I suppose, is was it 50% or 90% lethal, I suppose. But there was another factor that changed the human topography of Kentucky by the time we got here. The Dutch armed the Iroquois Nation in return for pelts. And as soon as the Iroquois got firearms, they went to war to the west to drive all other Native Americans out of the Ohio, what is now Ohio, Indiana, and Kentucky. They literally swept all of the Native Americans out of that area. And the Shawnee, who they're traditionally lived in Kentucky and in southern Ohio, for example, they were driven south. Some went all the way down to the coast. Nashville, Tennessee, was founded by a band of Shawnees who were driven south. And we have a record from their leader, who was half French and half Shawnee, who took his band going south and stopped at the village Escapicathicke on the warrior's path just north of Irvin outside of Clay City. So we know that it was there. We know that it was a healthy population when his band moved down. We also know that John Finley, the trader, trader is the right term. The trader, John Finley, came up the Kentucky River in 1751 and was taken to Escapicathicke by Shawnee that he met at Big Bone Licks. And he built a little stockade there. It was a tough time. There was war in the colonies. He may or may not have been held captive, but he left or escaped. He later met Daniel Boone at Braddock's defeat in the Revolutionary War and told Daniel Boone, "You ought to see this place I was at before I came here." 15 years later, 1769, he shows up in Daniel Boone's home and says, "I can't make it down the river there anymore, but if you'll take me to this thing called the Warrior's Path, I'll take you to this village I was at." And that's how Daniel Boone got into Kentucky. That's how Daniel Boone got on top of Pilot Knob. That's how he looked out and saw the bluegrass, but also saw that the village had been abandoned.
All right, if we had a bookmark, we'd stick it right there. And I want to also give a shout out to Landra Lewis, who's going to be joining us to dig into the history of just what you were talking about extensively over time. And we're looking forward to that. And thanks so much, Reggie. We're looking forward to your next installment. Reggie Von Stockham, lawyer, teacher, biologist, writer, guitarist, and backroads explorer. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Tom.